Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Ezra Ben Rachel Sheneftar B'Kitzur Yamim V'Shanim. Mr. Eddie Catton, donated by his dear son, our good friend Mr. Sam E. Catton. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Daf Tzaddi Dalid. Today's daf is being studied Le'alu Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Abraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are starting from the Mishnah on Tzaddi Gimel Amud Bet, six lines from the bottom. And the Mishnah says, Hamotzi Ochlin Pachot Mekeshi'ur Bechli Patur Af Ala Keli Sheakeli Tefelalo. The Mishnah says in its first ruling that if a person takes out food on Shabbat less than the prescribed measurement, we learned earlier that the prescribed measurement for food is a gedogeret, size of a fig. If a person carries on Shabbat less than the size of a fig shi'ud of food, bichli, and he carries it in a receptacle, patur af ala keli. Not only is he exempt because of the lack of measurement in the food, but he's also exempt for the carrying of the vessel that it's being held in. Why? Because the keli is subordinate to the food that is inside. It's just there to hold it. And therefore, one is going to be patur in this case on both items. If somebody carries a live person on Shabbat that is lying down on a bed, patur af ala mita. Not only is he patur for carrying the live person, like we'll see in the Gemara, the principle hay noseh et atzmo, so therefore he's exempt for carrying the live person, but he's also patur for carrying the bed as well. Why? Because shamita tefelalo. Because the bed is considered subordinate to the item that's on top of it. In this case, it's the hay, and therefore he's going to be patur as well. The Mishnah continues in its third din. And the Mishnah says, Etamet b'mita hayav. If somebody carries a dead person on the bed, so then he's going to be hayav. Because since we do not employ the hay noseh et atzmo rule, meaning that a live person carries his own weight, this is a dead person. And therefore, it's going to be considered full-fledged regular carrying, and therefore we're going to be hayav. The Mishnah continues, V'chen kazayit min amit. For that matter, if somebody carries on Shabbat an olive's worth size of a corpse, that's considered shi'ur hashuv, that's considered a significant measurement by a corpse, because that's the amount of tum'ah, that's the amount of corpse that can bring tum'ah in an ohel. V'chezayit min anevela. Nevela would be an animal, let's say, that was not slaughtered properly, so the shi'ur would be to carry it out on a nevela, also a kezai, because also that's the shi'ur that can bring tum'ah. Uchadasha min asheretz. Sheretz is a type of rodent that the Torah says is tameh when it dies, and the shi'ur of tum'ah that comes from a sheretz is the size of an adasha, which is the size of a lentil. So that would be the shi'ur for Shabbat as well. Hayab. Verabbi Shimon Poter. Rabbi Shimon says in these cases patur. Now the question is why? So Rabbi Shimon holds, for example, in all these cases that we mentioned hayab, he says patur. Take the example of the dead person that's being carried on the bed. So our Mishnah said you're going to be hayab because bottom line you're carrying a dead person. This one says ah. Rabbi Shimon says patur in that case. Why? We go back to the great machloket between Tanaim, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yehuda regarding melacha she'ena tzericha legufa. There is a great machloket. Rabbi Shimon says melacha she'ena tzericha legufa patur, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says melacha she'ena tzericha legufa hayav. What is this machloket? So we will define it according to Rashi, and the Rashi in our Dibur HaMetzi will define it, and then we'll read it inside together. Because it's a very important principle that we see throughout Masechet Shabbat. To be hayav on Shabbat, one must do a melacha. And according to Rabbi Shimon, the melacha must be similar to the melachot that were done in the Mishkan. In which way does it have to be similar? In the intent behind the melacha. Meaning as follows. In the Mishkan, all the melachot that were performed in order to positively construct something, to positively do something. And therefore, only melachot like that, that are being done willingly for a positive construction, will be hayav. Because that's similar to the intent of the Mishkan. However, any melacha that we might say is reactionary, meaning a situation came up, you'd rather that the situation hadn't come up in the first place, but now you're reacting to it, so such a melacha, since in the way that she says it, you'd wish that it didn't have to happen in the first place, so therefore that would be considered a melacha shena tzidicha legufa, and the Mishnah is going to say, you are patur in such melachot. Let's take our case with the mit, for example. A person, God forbid, has a mit in his house now. It's decomposing, it smells, and therefore the person wants to get rid of the mit and put it outside. So therefore, it's not going to be considered carrying from the Torah according to the Bishimon, because in this case over here, it's not a constructive melacha. The person would have rathered that the guy would not have died and that he wouldn't have to take him out. It's not like the Hotza'ah and the Mishkan, whereas when they moved items from point A to point B, it's because they wanted the items to be at point B. It was a constructive melacha. It wasn't reactionary. So that's the way Rabbi Shimon, according to Shitat Rashi, understands the concept of melacha shena tzidicha legufa. It should be pointed out that the Yehuda argues. And he says, no, even such a melacha that's reactionary to a negative situation still will be hayav. And that explains the machlok in al-Mishnah. Let's read the Rashi together. Rabbi Shimon poter, afilu b'met shalem, even by carrying out a מת דבי מלאכה שאין הצליחה לגופה וכל מלאכה שאין הצליחה לגופה אלא לסלקה מעליו, but you just want to get rid of the item that's in front of you. הבי מלאכה של הגופה דברצונו לא באה לו, which means the מלאכה did not happen over here, the situation is not willingly, ולא היה צריך לה. It's not considered a melacha that's done with the proper intent. That's the way that she understands the principle of melacha. We should mention that the Tosafot, after asking some questions on this way, the way that she understands it, has a different interpretation to melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa. That is in the Tosafot on Sadidaler Amud Rishon Dibur Matil Rabbi Shimon Poter. We could read that together inside the first line. It Eliri the Melacha Shel Asirika LeGufa Kari Kesheose Melacha VeEn Sarich LeOtot Sorech KeEn Shayut Sirichin La BeMishkan Ela LeAnyan Acher. He understands it like this. A much more stricter understanding of melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa, meaning we all agree it has to be similar to the Mishkan, but in a much more stricter sense. It has to be a melacha that the melacha was done with the same result intent as the result of the Mishkan, which means in the Mishkan they carried. Why? They wanted to bring something from point A to point B. So therefore, only such carrying, which is to bring something from point A and you want it at point B, that's going to be hayab. But the case of the mit, you don't want it at point B, you just want to get it out of point A. So such a milacha is not going to be tzidicha legufa, because it's not with the same result intent as was done in the Mishkan. Another example to explain the Tosafot's understanding. A person that traps, for example, a snake. The Gemara is going to tell us that that will also be subject to the machloket of melacha she'ena legufa. Why? It's trapping. There was trapping in the Mishkan. Yes. But trapping in the Mishkan was because they wanted the animal's hide. So therefore, they trapped it for the purpose of using the animal. Here, trapping a snake, you're only trapping it to keep it away from you so it doesn't damage. So that would be a melacha tzad, but without the same result intent that was done in the Mishkan. So that's going to be melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa. And therefore, the Mishnah will say, on such melachot, one is going to be patur. Whereas the Yehuda is going to say, Hayab, if you look at the Tosafot there, he brings many examples to prove his principle.
Would Rashi agree on the snake?
Yes, everybody agrees. It's just the question is, what's the reason? That she will tell you, you'd rather that the snake wasn't there in the first place. Okay. Right? You'd rather that the snake wasn't there to come by you. It's a reactionary concept. Comes the Gemara and begins. Tanu Rabbanan. Hamotzi Ochlin Kishi'ud. Now let's say a person carries food the proper measurement, meaning the shiur of a gerogeret. Im bichli, if he's carrying it in a vessel as well, hayab ala ochlin, so he's going to be hayab for carrying the shiur of ochlin, the food, upatur ala keli, and he's going to be patur again on the keli. Why? Because the keli is considered insignificant in this case. Why? Because it's tafel, it's secondary to the food. Therefore, once you hayab on the food, to be patur on the keli. The Gemara says, Vimaya keli tzarich lo, or the way that she says, Vimaya tzarich le kli, meaning if he needed the kli, which means, the way that she writes, Lehishtamez bo tashmish acher bimkom shemotzio sham, which is after you carry the item to where you carry it, you're going to use the keli now for another purpose. So therefore it says, Hayav af ala keli. So you're going to be the Hayav too. You're going to be Hayav for the carrying the food, and you're going to be hayav again, it seems, a second korban hatat for the carrying of the keli. Now, according to this, if we're talking about korban hatats, so we're talking about a case where, let's say, a person was in a he'alem, which means he was in a lapse. Let's say, for example, he forgot that carrying is asur on Shabbat. Okay? He knows it's Shabbat, but he forgot that carrying is asur. Now, we learned in the previous Pedakim, that in one lapse, no matter how many times you repeat the same melacha, you'd only be hayav one. And here the Gemara is telling us that if you took out a keli worth the prescribed shi'ud, and you're going to use the keli after, you're going to be hayav two. Now, again, if the assumption is that this is in one lapse, how could you be hayav two? Unless the Gemara is telling us a very big hadushi, that there is an opinion that will say that if a person commits repetitive sins in one lapse, you'll be hayav one per. Now, we haven't found that shita yet, but based on what this Gemara is saying, we could deduce that, let's take a case outside of Shabbat. A person eats chelet, right? A person eats fat, that is a suit from the Torah. Now normally we said, no matter how many kezayits of chalev that he eats in the same lapse, he'd only be hayav one korban hatat. But based on this, we can now say there must be an opinion out there that will say that according to the amount of kezetim or kezetot that you ate of chalev, so you'll be hayav one per. And that's what the Gemara says. Shma mina ochel shne zete chalev be'alem achad hayav shtayim. Comes out according to this that we have now found an opinion in Shas that will say that indeed you'll be hayav two for eating the two kizitim achvelim in one helem. Why? Because we're deducing that from the case of Shabbat. Just like by the case of Shabbat we're saying that if a person carries a keli with intention to use the keli and there's food in the keli, it'll be hayav two hataot, one for the keli and one for the food. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshat. Rav Sheshat says, no. Achab imay askinan. What are we talking about over here? By the case of Shabbat, kegon sheshagag ala ochlin vehezid ala keli. Which means you're not going to bring two korban hataot. You're going to bring one korban hatat. Why? Because regarding the food, you're a shogeg. So therefore, there's a korban hatat regarding the food. Which means, let's say, for example, the guy, he didn't know the proper shi'ur of carrying on Shabbat. He thought that, you know, gerogeret is okay. So he's a shogeg on that. So for the food, there'll be hayab, korban hatat. However, on the keli, he was a mezid. He knew that carrying a keli on Shabbat is hayav, and therefore he's not hayav two hataot in one lapse. On the contrary, he's only hayav one hatat for the food, and he's hayav sekila, according to Rashi, for the keli. And that's what the Gemara means when it says, v'imayat sarich likli hayav afalakli. What does it mean? Hayav mita. which means really, if a person commits two inadvertent acts in one Hi'alim, you only hayav one hatam. But what does it mean in the Gemara that says you'll be hayav even on the keli? It's talking about a case where you're a shogeg on the orkel and you're a mezid on the keli, and therefore it's saying you hayav on the keli, meaning hayav mitah, but you're not going to be hayav two hataot. That's the way Rashi understands the case. But in a chenamif, let's say you were a shogeg on both, you'd only bring one korban hatat. Again, let's read the top Rashi. Sheshagag ala ochrin vezid ala keli umay hayav dektani mita. Now, the Rishonim, no, you have to bring, bring the Korban Hatat for the food that you were shogeg on, and then after that, they kill him for the mezid on the keli. The only problem that they have with Rashid is Tosfot's question, that Rashba asks it as well, and if they offer their own interpretation of this Gemara, we'll just say over the question that they have on the Rashi, which is a very strong question, the Chavura. We know that who brings a korban korban hatat? Somebody that did something inadvertently. Inadvertently means, as we learned in the previous Gemara, that if you tell him that this is asur, he'll refrain, because he only did it because he didn't know. But if the person, let's say, didn't know, and even if you tell him that it's asur, he'd do it anyway, so he's not subject to korban hatat. In this case, if he's a shogeg and mezid at the same time on another Yisum Shabbat, that shows you that the guy don't care about carrying. Hadaya, he's carrying intentionally the keli. So in this case, how could you be hayav a korban hatat for the food? That's the Tosafot's question on the bottom of Tzadik Gimel Amud Bet. And for that matter, he offers different interpretations to this case. Ayin Sham. Comes to Gemara and has its own question. Matkif la Rav Asher. Rav Asher had a question. Veha af ala keli ketani, which means, if we want to be precise in the language that was brought, the Gemara said in the Braita that if he wanted the keli, he's hayav also on the keli. Now, from the fact that it said hayav also on the keli, it sounds the same. I mean, just like you'll be hayav on the food, a korban, you'll be hayav on the keli, a korban. From the word af ala keli is mashma, it's a similar hayuv. Now, to come along and say, no, the hayuv shogeg is on the food, and the mezid is on the keli, that's not af. It sounds like it's two different punishments. From the word af ala keli is mashma, it is the same. So we're back to the question then. Is it possible to be hayav two hataot in one alim? So the Gemara says, yes indeed. Ela amar Rav Asher, kegon sheshagag beze ubaze. Yes, I go back to our original premise. He was a shogeg on both. He was a shogeg on not knowing the shiur of food, or for that matter, not knowing that there's an isur to carry, let's say. And therefore, he didn't know the keli is asur. He's a shogeg on both. Venoda'lo, vehazar venoda'lo. However, his knowledge came at different times, meaning his realization of the sin came at different times. He was nodalo, for example. First, he had to realize that he carried ochel, but he only thought he carried ochel. Then he had another yidiah subsequently that he carried the keli. Now, if you remember earlier, we had a mahloket when you have separate yidiot. Do the yidiot split? Do the yidiot have the ability to separate each korban, each transgression? That was a machlokin of Yohanan and the Shtakish. Rabbi Yohanan said, indeed, yidiot mehalkot. And therefore, true, he did two in one he'alim. He did two shogegs in one lapse. However, his yidiot, his realization of sin, happened at separate times. So therefore, Rabbi Yohanan says, what? Yohayav two. So that's the case where it says above that he's hayav even on the keli, because his yidiot happened at separate times. So the Gemara says, Ufluktad Rabbi Yohanan v'Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. It's going according to the opinion of the Mahlok Rav, Rabbi Shimon and Ishtakish. Rabbi Yohanan and Ishtakish. And Rabbi Yohanan will say, Yohayav two. Why? Because the yidiot have the ability to divide these things. So therefore, the Gemara basically offered two answers. What does it mean in the Braita when it says hayav af ala keli? The first answer was offered by Rav Sheshat. He said, Hayav afala keli, Hayav mita. Okay? Why did Rav Sheshat offer that answer? So the Gemara, that she tells us, because he, I'm reading that she over here. Let's read that she. Right, because they argued above in Perek Lal Gadol on this principle: does the yediyah in between split each one? Right, that's the same argument that these two rabbis that answered the Braita have also. Rav Sheshat did not interpret the Braita as such. Kasabar de en yediyot mehalkot. Rav Sheshat must hold in yidiot mechalkot, and therefore, even though he had two separate yidiot, it's still considered one. And therefore, he had to answer the two is because he was a mezid on the keli. And Rav Asher that gave this answer must hold like Rav Yohanan that says yidiot mechalkot, and that's the way he'll explain the braita. Hence, the two answers of Rav Sheshat and Rav Asher also based on the machloket of Rav Yohanan and Rish Lakish. Comes the Gemara further and says, Etachai b'mita. Patur af ala mita. That if a person is carrying a live person in the bed, so he's patur, not only for the bed, because the bed is subordinate to the person that's on it, but even for the person. Why? Because of the principle we said, hay nose et atzmo, that a live person carries his own weight. Now the Gemara will explain. Lema matnitin Rabbi Natani. Let us say the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Natan. Velo Rabbanan. And not the rabbis. Why? The Tanya, because we have a Braita. Hamotzi behema chaya va'of reshut rabim. If a person carries a type of animal or a type of bird in the public domain, ben chayin, whether they're alive, uben shehutin, or whether they are slaughtered, chayav. The opinion of the rabbis is hayav. So you see over here clearly the rabbis hold that even though it's a live animal, it's still considered carrying, because you don't say the principle of hay noseh et atzmo, that a live being carries its own weight. You see the rabbis clearly say by an animal at least that one is going to be hayav. However, Rabbi Natan omer al shechutin hayav. Yes, if they're dead, Rabbi Natan says hayav, because they don't carry their own weight. Val hayin patur. Why? Shachai noseh et atzmo. So therefore, we want to say that the author of our Mishnah as well must be Rabbi Natan. I mean, just like he says by animals, the principle of hayin noseh et atzmo, so too we must say it by human beings. And the rabbis obviously do not subscribe to this opinion. Amar Rava, Rava says no. Afilu tema Rabbanan. I can tell you that our Mishnah is even going according to the opinions of the rabbis, that you're going to be patur for carrying a live person. Why? Ad kan lo pedigi Rabbanan aled Rabbi Natan. Where did the rabbis argue on Rabbi Natan? Ela bebehema chayavahov. They only argued by animals. Why? Demisharbete nafshayu. Because Misharbet Atayu, the way that she means, that she says it is, Misharbet Nafshayu, Mishtamtim Kilape Mata, which means they press their weight down, which is when you're holding an animal, he wants to escape. He doesn't want to be there. So he makes himself, he tightens himself up, so to speak, and that causes his weight to be placed down. Therefore, it's not considered carrying his own weight. On the contrary, it's considered regular weight, so to speak. And therefore, then the rabbis will say, there's no hay noseh et atzmo by animals. Abal adam hay de noseh et atzmo, but a human being, that when you do carry him, let's say, he also shares, and so to speak, we'll explain it like this, since he balances himself, so therefore, he also, his load is lighter than his weight, because he himself, so to speak, is, through his balance, makes it easier, as opposed to an animal that is resisting. So, afilu rabbanan modu. Even the rabbis will agree. Now, it comes out according to this. We're saying there's a machloket between the rabbis and Rabbi Natan by animals. Rabbi Natan says, you say, I know say it, that's more even by animals. They carry their weight, so to speak. Whereas Rabbanan say, no, by animals, they resist. They pull themselves down, so to speak. They tighten themselves up the way that she says. Therefore, they're considered carrying. Where does everybody agree? By a living human being. And we can say, therefore, the author of our Mishnah that said if you carry a live human being, you're patur. That would be even Rabbanan. Now, we have to understand this principle for a moment of Haino Seh Tatsmo. Tosafot asks the obvious question here on the Sugya. What do I care if the live person is balancing himself, meaning the balance of weight is a little easier, and therefore he's lightening himself up? Bottom line, you're carrying, which means I don't care if a 100-pound man now, because you're carrying him, it feels like you're carrying a 90-pound man. Bottom line, if you carry even 1 pound on Shabbat, you're hayav. Jeez, we don't measure carrying according to weights now. So therefore, even if he lightened his load by the balance that he has, the live person, still it should be asur. So the Tosafot answers that all our melachot are really learned from the Mishkan. And the Tosafot says, since we did not find the carrying of things with life in the Mishkan, so therefore, Haino Seh Tatsu is Patur. Now, where did we have life in the Mishkan? Well, certainly they didn't carry human beings in the construction of the Mishkan. Nor did they carry the animals that were needed. For example, they used the tahash, that was the type of animal that they used for its skins, and the ayam. They didn't lift those. They actually just, they pulled them on a leash, exactly. Or they just drew them. So therefore, Tosfot says, since we did not find a source or an origin in the Mishkan, so therefore such a hotzah is not going to be hayav. Now, as we explained, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichro Vracha, explains this Tosafot. He says, what do you mean? You have to find exact hotzah? We find carrying in the Mishkan now. So we didn't find that they carried, styrofoam cups in the Mishkan. So you're going to tell me that what? There's some styrofoam cups here you can carry on Shabbat? Well, what do I care? Because I didn't find this exact style of carrying. So what you find is a novel interpretation. He says, no. He says, the carrying of the Mishkan was what he calls, it was carrying that was evident that the item was carried. Because an inanimate object can only be carried if somebody lifted it. An inanimate object doesn't have legs, it can't walk. Such a sa'ah that's evident, that is considered hotza'ah. However, a hotza'ah, like carrying a high, since it's not evident, because you could say, maybe the guy walked there. Which means, even though you carried him, but it's a type of hotza'ah that's not nikar. Why? So the way he interprets the Haino Seh Tatsmo is a novel way. He says, because Haino Seh Tatsmo, a human being or a live person, carries himself, meaning in general he carries himself. He walks. He walks. And since he walks, an item that can get there without being carried, for example, a high that's no Seh Tatsmo, is not going to be subject to the Surah of Shabbat. That's what it means for Sfot when he says, we learn it from the Mishkan. Meaning we learn from the Mishkan the type of carrying. Not they didn't carry this, they didn't carry that. Which means the type of carrying in the Mishkan is evident carrying by inanimates. But by the animate object, like a live thing, no. In any event, there's other Shitot, there's Tosfot later on in the Masechet, that clearly says a different reason. Like we interpreted until now, that somehow the weight of the live person balances itself and therefore takes away from the load, so to speak. Which means, what type of hotza'ah did the Mishkan mehayev? The Mishkan's mehayev only types of items that its weight is its weight. That it's 100 pounds and it feels like 100 pounds. But it did not mechayev types of carrying where it's 100 pounds, but it feels like 90. So that type of hotza'ah, we didn't see in the Mishkan. So there's two different ways of understanding the concept why Haino Seh Tatsmo did patur. But we're seeing from this Gemara at least that everybody agrees that by a human being, there is going to be the principle of Haino Seh Tatsmo. Therefore, Rabbanan, including Rabbanan and Rabbi Natan, can be the authors of this Mishnah. The Gemara is going to go into more detail now. The Gemara says, Amale Rava Daba Rahava de Rava. Rava Daba Rava told Rava. Now, let me give you an introduction to the Gemara that we're going to say now. The Gemara is going to teach us that it's forbidden to sell animals to Goyim. Now, why should it be forbidden to sell an animal to a goy? So the reason is because we're concerned that if we let you sell the animals, you might come to rent them animals or loan them animals. So what's the problem with renting an animal to a goy? Because he's going to use the animal on Shabbat. Now since you rented it to him, you're still the owner. And the Torah demands from us that just like we're not allowed to work, our animals are not allowed to work as well. So therefore the Hachamim made a gezerah, you can't sell animals to the goyim. So comes the Gemara and says, but we have a Mishnah. Ben Beteram Matir Besus. Ben Beteram said, I agree you can't sell animals to the goyim, but you know what? A horse, you can. So the question is, why is a horse different? It says, Betanya. Because we have a bright that explains it. Ben Beteram Matir Besus. Ben Beteram allows selling the horse. Because how do you use a horse? What's the melacha use with a horse? Doesn't work. It carries the rider. Now, carrying a rider on Shabbat would only be isur derabanan. It's not isur deraita. Because hayno se etatzmo. So therefore, what are we saying? The only time we made an isur to sell an animal to a goy is if the goy is going to use the animal, be isur deoraita. And then we say, we make a gezerah, you can't sell it because you might come to rent it. But Bimba Terah says, since the primary use of a horse is to ride, is people ride it, and even if, let's say, the Jew would ride the horse on Shabbat, it would be only isur derabanan because of so therefore, Ben Betera allowed to sell the horse. So comes Gemara and says, "V'amar Rabbi Yohanan, Ben Betera v'Rabbi Natan Amru Davar Echad." So Rabbi Yohanan came along and commented and said, "You know, Ben Betera that was matir to sell the horse, and Rabbi Natan that says Hayno Seit Atzmo, they basically were saying the same thing." Now wait. According to the way we learned the Gemara, when it comes to human beings, everybody holds Hayno Seit Atzmo. So why did Rabbi Yohanan say that Ben Betera and Rabbi Natan said the same thing? He could have said Ben Betera and the rabbis. Everybody's saying the same thing over here because, according to the way the Rabbah interpreted the Gemara, everybody holds by a human being Hayno Seit Atzmo. So the Gemara asked that question. And if you're going to tell me that the rabbis only argued on the binatan ela bebehema chayava off, only by animals was the machlok, because they stiffened themselves up and they pulled their way down, why did you only say that ben betera goes like the binatan? The ha'amart afil rabbanan modu. You said even the rabbis agree, so therefore the binatan and the ben betera can be going even like the rabbis. So the Gemara says, "Ki amar Rabbi Yohanan besus miyuchad leofot." We're talking about a special horse, not a regular horse. Which means, you're right. Regarding a regular horse, technically everybody should agree it should be mutar. But we're talking about a specific horse over here that's designated for birds. There were certain horses that would carry birds. Now, with regards to birds, it's a machloket between Rabbi Natan and Hakamim. Right? They argued by animals and birds. And therefore, we're talking about a specific horse that only carries birds. Therefore, can only be going according to Rabbi Natan. So the Gemara says, "Umi ika susam yuhad de'afot?" Is there indeed a certain type of horse that is designated to carrying birds? The Gemara says, yes. Ika debe vaidan. She means, yes, the bird hunters. Now, that she tells us about an old practice, they called that in English falconry, that they used to do in the olden days. The rich aristocrats, they used to go hunting. How would they hunt? They would take a falcon, and they would place it on the back of a horse, and it would sit perched on the back of the horse, and they would bring it out to the fields. Now, when they would get to the fields, the falcons would go out, and they were predatory birds, and they would go catch other birds. So the way they would bring the bird out to the field was they'd ride it on the horse. Somehow, as she says, the bird would sit on the back of the horse even though you didn't tie it down. So therefore, and I'll explain to you why that she has to say even though you didn't tie it down, you'll see it's going to be evident in a moment. So therefore, if you say it's a horse that's designated for falcons, so therefore, according to the Rabbi Natan, we say the rule of Hainoset Tatsmo even by birds. And therefore, it would only be Isud Rabbanan on Shabbat. Therefore, you can sell it to the Goy, because we're not going to make a Gezerah that you might come to, rent it or lend it to him. However, the rabbis will say like this. This is what Tosafot explains to the rabbis. Since already we found the type of horse, for example, the horse that uses the, that they put on the back, falcons, since we found one type of horse that's asur, the rabbis forbade all horses, which means lo pelug, whether it's horses that are designated to carry falcons, or even horses that are designated to carry human beings, which the rabbis would agree to, I know say that's all, but you know what? Once already we said one type of horse is asur, the rabbis are going to be osed, all types. So comes the Gemara and says, "Amar Rabbi Yohanan, Umodei Rabbi Natan bechafut." Now the Gemara introduces the subject of kafut. What is kafut? Let's say the animal, or for that matter, the human being, is tied up. For example, it's bound, it's roped up, it's tied up. So something that's kafut, so it doesn't have the law of Haino Seif Atzmo. Because if you explain that, it becomes like dead weight again. Which is, if you explain the word that the Haino Seif Atzmo, because he helps himself, he balances himself, he lifts himself a little, so he's helping with the carrying. However, if he's bound, so therefore, he's going to go back to the law of, let's say, Avdil, a dead person. And therefore, the Binatan, who was very lenient on the law of Haino Seif Atzmo, which is, he said it even by animals. But that's only talking about animals that are not bound. That's why that she had to learn earlier that the falcon is just sitting on the horse's back, not tied. However, Rabbi Natan will agree that if the animal is tied up, or for that matter, the human being, let's say, is bound, so then we're not going to say the principle of Haino Seif Atzmo. So it comes out like this. The only mahloket now, we just minimize the mahloket. The only mahloket to Rabbi Natan and the rabbis is by an animal that is not bound. Which is, if the animal is bound, everybody agrees, no Haino Seif Atzmo. If the human being is bound, everybody also agrees, no Haino Seif Atzmo. So what's the argument? By an animal that's not bound, we have a mahloket between Rabbi Natan and Chachamim. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar le'Rabada bar Matna le'Abaye. So Gemara says, oh, is that so? There were certain Persians, and the Gemara tells these Persians over here were very, very spoiled in their nature. That when they ride horses, they ride in such a way as if they're bound, which means they would, the way that she says, they would wear certain wide garments, which would not give them too much flexibility to move. They were very, very, like, they acted in a very rich way. And therefore, they did not move on the horse. And the sheet tells us they were even so finicky that these guys would not put their feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. So technically, these guys are considered like bound. And therefore what? And therefore what? So he says, and Rabbi Yohanan taught, Ben betera v'Rabbi Natan amru davar echad, which means, and we learned earlier, right, that Rabbi Yohanan said that Ben betera that said you can sell a horse to a goy, and Ben betera did not make a difference of what type of horse. Meaning, you can even sell it to a Parsi. Now, even though the Parsi is considered bound on the horse, and therefore, what do you see? That what? Rabbi Yohanan is saying that the Binatan agrees with Ben Betera that you could sell a horse to any goy, right? Because he didn't make a hiluk on what type of goy. That means what? Must be that Ben Betera doesn't hold to this thing of kafut. And therefore, Rabbi Yohanan that said that the Binatan goes with Ben Betera, that means the Binatan also doesn't hold of this thing of kafut. That you'll still say Haino Seif Atzmo by kafut. But you, Rabbi Yohanan, you just told me a second ago that what? Rabbi Yohanan himself was the one that said Modeh Rabbi Natan b'kafut. Odd time we repeat the question. Rabbi Yohanan is the one that said that Rabbi Natan agrees that if the guy is bound, there's no Haino Seif Atzmo. What are you talking about? The Parsiim are considered bound the way they ride their horses. And still, Ben Betera allowed to sell such a horse to a Parsi. And you told me, Rabbi Yohanan, Rabbi Natan, and Ben Betera saying the same thing. That means what? that even though it's bound, Rabbi Natan says it's not. It's still considered Haino Seyat Atzmo. So I have a question on Rabbi Yochanan. Make up your mind. Does he hold of kafut or does he hold of kafut? So the Gemara says, Atam ramut ruchahu denakit lehud. No, the Persians are just acting in a haughty, arrogant way, which means if they have to move, they'll move. Which means they might sit in that way because they just want to show arrogance. But if they have to put their feet on the ground, they're jumping on the ground and they'll run. Like the Gemara says a story. The Gemara says, Da'u pardashka, there was a certain pardashka that she says a sadiyot, that's an officer. Deratah Malka Elavid, it was a Persian officer that the king got angry at him. So the Persian officer ran away from the king, three parseh on his feet. Which means when the Persians have to put their feet on the ground to run to save their lives, they're not so finicky. So therefore they're just acting and they sit on the horse in a way like that that makes themselves look as kafut, but they're really not considered kafut. Therefore, Rabbi Natan ben Betra allowed you to sell a horse even to the Persians, because the way they sit on the horse is not really considered kafut. They could move, and indeed they do move. Comes again on further and says, "Vehen kezayit menamet." Okay, we learned in the Mishnah that it was in the subsequent cases that it is permissible. According to the Bishimon, at least, who holds melacha she'ena tzricha legufa patur. So he said, if a person carries a met out of the house on Shabbat, patur. Again, let's go explain according to Rashi. Since the fellow would have rather that he didn't have to carry the met out at all, he's reacting now to a negative situation, which means the guy died. Now he died in his house. He would have rather that he wouldn't be put in the situation. Therefore, it's reactionary. It's not similar to the melachot that were done in the Mishkan, that were constructively done for a positive reason. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Poter haya Rabbi Shimon, Av b'motzi et hamet lekovro. Very interesting. Even if, let's say, you're taking the med out, not just taking him out of the house, but you're actually taking him for the burial, you're taking him to the cemetery on Shabbat, still Rabbi Shimon will say it's a melacha shena sinicha legufa. Now here already we have to analyze now, which means the question is, what are you talking? We said what the whole reason is, what? Because let's say you just want to get rid of it. But here it's a little different. Here you want the mit to get to the burial. So therefore, how can the Gemara say that this is still considered a melachash in a tzedika legufa? So look at the top of Rashi. The top of Rashi speaks volumes. Ab b'motzi et hamit lekobro. Velo tema. Don't say lo patar ela b'manicho lachutz de'en tzorech lo legufo shel motzi velo legufa shel otza'a da'afilu tzorech hamet patur. Which means, according to what Rashi's telling you, is not only in a case where when you put it, let's say, outside, just because you want to get rid of the smell. So therefore, Rashi tells you that is the way. I don't benefit from the otza'a. Right, because I don't benefit from the hotza. I just want to get the met. I don't care for this hotza, and the met doesn't benefit from the hotza. That's for sure. So the Gemara is telling you, even in a case where the object is benefiting, since the person himself is not benefiting, that's considered melachash in asidicha legufa. Now the only, so there again, who's benefiting from this carrying over here? The object, which is the met. To be considered a melacha, it's the one that's doing the melacha. It has to have the benefit. So therefore, the chiddush is even if the object received the benefit over here, so therefore it's still considered melachash in tzedek gufa. The only question is, why is that so? Seemingly, even the person that's carrying it, since he's bringing him to bury, he gets a mitzvah. Isn't it a mitzvah to bury? Which means, if a person carries, for example, a lulav on Shabbat, of course, he's going to be considered hayav. Why? Because he wants the benefit from the carrying. So therefore, the same thing over here. If a person is carrying a mat in order to bury him, so he's taking it as a mitzvah now, to go take him to the cemetery. It's a mitzvah to take him to the cemetery to bury him, which is considered menachah. So this is the question that the Evnei Nezer asks. So he even goes further, he says, furthermore, you're doing a mitzvah of giving the met kapara, etc. So he says, it's a mitzvah. So he answers like this. The main intention is, bottom line, to get rid of the met. How do we know? He says, for example, by Avraham Avinu, when he buried Sarah, he said, Ve'ekbera et meti melefanai. Avraham is very careful in his language. He didn't just say about his wife, Ve'ekbera et meti, let me bury my corpse. No, Ve'ekbera et melefanai, which is, I have to get rid of it in front of him because it is, so to speak, decomposing. So therefore, since the Ikar purpose of the burial is really just to get rid of it, so you have to bury it, you have to put it somewhere. Well, so therefore, yes, that is the ikar intent of the person, even though of course he has come up from his father, but the ikar is just to, you have to get rid of it. So what do you get rid of? You get rid of it in the cemetery, but he has to get rid of it. So therefore, it's menachah she'ena sedichah legufa. Comes to Gemara and says, Amar Rava, top line of the Amud Bet, Umoded Rabbi Shimon agrees, Bemar lahporbo, that if you take out a hoe, or a type of spade, a shovel, if you take it out in order to use it to dig, the Sefer Torah lekrotbo, or you take a Sefer Torah out in order to read, the hayav, that you're going to be hayav. That's considered melacha, shesiricha legufa. You're taking the hoe out to use it, and taking the Sefer out to use it. So the Gemara says, Peshita. Isn't that obvious? Because if you're going to tell me that these cases are also melachah shenasidikah gufai, ela melachah shenasidikah gufai that Rabbi Shimon hechi meshkahatla. If you're going to entertain to say these cases are also patur, so then what's the case that you're going to say hayav? This should be an obvious case. You're taking a shovel out to go dig. It means you need the shovel. So therefore, the Gemara says, you know what? Hayav. Because of course hayav. If you're not going to tell me hayav in this case, then which case? Oh, you're going to be a chayav. So the Gemara says, no, ma'u de tema ad de'ika legufo u legufa. I might have thought that maybe Rabbi Shimon only says you're chayav where the person that's carrying it out has benefit, and the item itself that's being carried out is for the purpose. For example, kegon mar la'asot lo tas ve'lachpor, which means, let's say your shovel was dented, and therefore you needed to actually fix the shovel by, let's say, placing a metal piece at the end of it in order to make it usable for digging. So therefore, when you're carrying the shovel out, it's for two purposes. You're carrying it for your benefit in order to dig, and you're also carrying it out for the shovel's benefit, purpose, what? To fix it. So you might have thought that the only time the Mishnah says your hayav is what? When it's a double benefit. It's a benefit to the one that's carrying, so to speak, and the thing that is being carried. Now, by the Sefer Torah, I will say, Sefer Torah lagiyav lekrotpo. And the only time I'll say your hayav when you carry your Sefer Torah is when you're carrying it to read. So that's your benefit, and also to correct it, because the Sefer Torah has a mistake. So therefore, it's the benefit of the Sefer Torah as well. Kamash Malan, the Gemara says, no. That's why we're telling you, don't have to have a double benefit, which means it's enough if the person has the hana, which means he's now using the shovel because he needs it to dig, even though the shovel itself, you're not taking out for the purpose of the shovel itself, it's enough. That's why the Gemara has to tell us those obvious cases, because they're not so obvious. Because I would have thought that maybe the Bishamon says, the only time you hayav in a melacha, if it serves the man and it serves the item that he took out. The Gemara now tells a story. There was a certain corpse that was in the village or the city of Drokeret. Shara Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Le'afuke Le'Karmelit. So Rav Nachman allowed them to move the body into a rabbinical domain. She's from the Reshut Yahid, was the house. Okay. So he told them, move it out into the Karmelit, into the rabbinical domain. Amar le Rav Yohanan ahu demor bered Rav Nachman bar Yitzhak. So he told them, when he heard this story, he said, the rabbi, Rav Yohanan said, Keman, who is this going like? Can it be Shimon? Which is, who are they following? They must have been taking the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that says that carrying a body is only considered a melacha she'ena siricha legufa, and therefore since the melacha siricha legufa, so they were lenient to take him out into the Karmelit. So the Gemara says, Imar, so he continued to ask his question. He said, hold it. Who are they following? They're following Rabbi Shimon. Imar de patar Rabbi Shimon mehayuv hatat. Yeah, all Rabbi Shimon said is melacha siricha legufa is patur, which is patur from a hatat. Isurad de vera miyaika. But it's still Sumed Rabbanan. So then he was asking, what's their intent to take a body out and put it in a Karmelit? Which is even according to the Mishimon, it's going to be Asur Med Rabbanan. Yeah, true, it's a Medrakash and Enas and Nikal Gufa. But it's still Asur. It's Sumed Rabbanan. You're taking it from one domain to another domain. So the rabbi, the Mishimon, was trying to understand, what were they doing over there? How did the rabbi allow them to take the dead body out from the house into the Karmelit? So he says, what are you going to tell me? They follow Rabbi Shimon, because Melacha Shenaz Regufa doesn't make it mutar. Melacha Shenaz Regufa, which means you don't want them, like Shitat Rashi, we don't care, we wish the man didn't die. So it's a reactionary Melacha. So it's a Melacha Shenaz Regufa. Does that make it permissible? No, it's still Asur. So he says, what were they doing? So Amar Le. So the Gemara says, that Ibn Nachman answered, and he said, "Ha Elohim." So to speak, I was like, "I swear, De'ailat be'at, that you would have done it. You would have carried it out yourself." The way the Mefarshim explained it, the Ran explains meaning. Let me explain to you. He says, "What happened?" And after I give you a satisfactory explanation, you yourself will agree, and you yourself would have carried the myth out. He says, "Va'afilu de Rabbi Yehuda." He says, you know what? They were following not only Rabbi Shimon's opinion, but they could have even been doing this according to Rabbi Yehuda that says, Melacha she'ena siricha legufa hayav. He says, Demi ka'amina l'reshut ha-rabim? Did I tell you that they brought it into a public domain? Which would be Yisud Deoraita? Le karmelit ka'amina. I told you they brought it into a karmelit. Gadol kavod ha-beriyot she'dohe et lo ta'aseh she'batorah. Which means, we have a rule. Gadol kavod ha-beriyot, when it comes to respect for the people, for honoring, respecting people, human dignity we'll call it, it's so great that it even has the ability to override a law from the Torah. Which law? One specific law. The Torah says, Lo tasur ben adavar asher yagidu lecha yamin usmol, that we're not allowed to veer from the path that the rabbi set for us. So which means, listening to the rabbis, the rabbinical ordinances, has its root in the Torah. So therefore the rule is like this. The rabbis' ordinances are overridden in a case where there is human dignity. And therefore, carrying into a Karmelit, according to everybody, is only Isur, even according to Yehuda. I don't care melachah she'ena legufa. Now, if you carry it to a public domain, but if you carry it to a Karmelit, Isur Rabbanan. So he told him, you know why he was lenient? Gadol kavod ha-beriyot. Where's the human dignity over here? There's two ways of looking at it. Either human dignity of the living, which means it smells, the bed smells, therefore human dignity, give them a chance to get rid of it. Or the human dignity is the mat, which means they move the mat out to a place that is more, let's say, sumer, they move them to the shade or something like that, where it's kavod ha-beriyot. The point is that's why they allowed to put it into a Karmelit. Even a Yehuda would agree. Only question we could ask is, it seems from this Gemara that according to the Bishimon that says any melacha she'ena siricha legufa is only rabbinical, the Rabbanan, so seemingly it should have been allowed to actually put him into a reshut harabim, because anyway it's a melacha she'ena siricha legufa, even going to the public domain. The Ari Shonim that indeed learn like that, that according to the Bishimon it would be permissible indeed to move the body even into a reshut harabim because of this principle of Gadol Kavod HaBeriyot. Now, it should be pointed out that Rashi says that the only way that they were able to carry out this mit is by placing a kikar or tinok on the mit. Because a mit is mukseh. Now, you have to alleviate the mukseh issue. So how do you alleviate the mukseh issue? You put a kikar or a tinok, you put a loaf of bread on the mit, or you put a tinok, a child, and therefore it becomes now a basis to something that is mutar. So Tosfot says, what do you mean? Isud Rabbanan, wave that as well. But didn't we just say gadol kavod beriyot? So the Tosafot says on something. That's just Tosafot on the bottom of the page on Sadidal Amud Bet. I'm sorry, Sadidal Amud Rishon, bottom Tosafot Gadol. He says v'yesh toma deshani tiltul de'efshad ayedik kikar etinot lekach lotinu binyan achayet. It's easy to alleviate that problem. If you have a way out, don't transgress the Yisud Rabbanan. Fix it. Do the least you can do. Put the tinok on it. Put the kikar. And you got to carry it out. There's no way not to carry it out. Therefore, the rabbis will waive what they have to waive because of Gadol Beriyot. But if you can get around it without having to override it, so then you fulfill it. Comes the Gemara further and says, Tananatam, we learned in a Mishnah, Hatole Simane Tum'ah. Now this is a law that's set by the law of Sara'at. Sara'at is the spiritual leprosy that used to contaminate a person and make him a Mitzorah, which he becomes Tameh. So the Torah tells us that certain types of leprosy, there's signs that the Kohen looks at to see if they are indeed Tameh or not. One of the signs is if you have two white hairs growing in the middle of the spot. So now comes a person, he sees he has a spot of leprosy on him, and he has two white hairs, so he goes and he pulls out the two white hairs. So now, when the Kohen looks at it, you're not going to see the simanim. So it's Hatole Simane Tum'ah Vehichva Hamihya. Or you have another case. Let's say a person has a tzara'at, a blemish of leprosy on his body. One of the signs that you tell is, if let's say it's all dead skin where the leprosy is, but in the middle there's a little piece of live skin. The flesh is still healthy. So that's a sign. So what does the guy do? He comes along and cuts away or peels away the live skin. In order now that's all considered dead skin, and therefore it does not have the sign. So he says, V'hichva ha-mihya. Mihya is the live skin. Let's say he peeled it off or he cut it off. Over belo ta'aseh. That's considered a transgression from the Torah. Because the Torah clearly says, no, this is not on Shabbat. In general, Torah says, Hishamer benega tzara'at. Which means you have to warn you. I'm warning you, the Torah says, regarding nega tzara'at. Meaning, what's the warning? Do not impede it. Do not do anything to take away the tzara'at. Therefore, if a person takes off the two hairs, or if he takes the live skin, he's going to be hayab. Itma. Now the Gemara says, Ahat mishtayim. Let's say there were two hairs, and you plucked one hair out. So the Gemara says, Hayav. Because bottom line, still, that is not two hairs anymore. So even one hair can bring Hayuv, because now you took away the siman of Tumah. The Gemara says the third case, Ehat Mishalosh. Let's say there were three hairs, and you just took away one. So technically, the Tumah is still there. However, the Gemara says, Rav Nachman Amar Hayav. Rav Nachman says Hayab, and Rav Sheshad Amar Patur. And the Gemara is going to explain. Rav Nachman Amar Hayab, Ahani Ma'asav. He did something. His action accomplished something. He benefited. Why? De'im ishtakla chada achariti. Because now if one more hair falls off, Azdala Tumah. Which means he brought himself now to the threshold of Tumah. Which means now he brought himself to the minimum again. Now all one more hair has to fall off. So he benefited by taking that third hair off. Ve'rav Sheshat Amar Patur. Why? Hashtamiya ha'ita le'tumah. Bottom line, we look at what it is now. You took off one hair. You still have two hairs there now. Tumah's still there. You didn't do anything. So we have a machloket how to look at taking one from three. Amar Rav Sheshat. So Rav Sheshat says, Mina amina la. Rav Sheshat now is going to bring a proof to the case of three hairs pulling one off, patur. What's his proof? It's going to be from our Mishnah. Ditnan v'chen kizayit min amet v'kizayit min anebela hayav. We learned in our Mishnah that what's the shiur of hayuv you carry on Shabbat, a piece of the corpse. So the shiur is a kizayit, because we said a kizayit is considered a significant shiur, because that's the shiur that brings tumah. So the Gemara makes a diyuk, an implication from our Mishnah. Ha chatzi zayit patur. Implying what? That if you take half a kezayit of a mit, you're going to be patur. So the Gemara says, "Ve'at tanya hatzizayit chayav." Well, but what do you, we have a braita that says half a zayit is chayav, so we have a contradiction from a mishnah to the braita. So Rav Sheshat comes along and says, I'll answer. My love, haditanya chayav, you know what the case of chayav is? The apik chasi zayit mikizayit. Which means, let's say, right, let's say you had already a shi'ud kizayit. Right? Now kizayit's already shi'ud hashu'ud because it's able to bring tumah. And you went out and you took half. In that case, it should be hayav. Why? Because now you took away the tumah. You did something significant, which is now the nice guy that walks in, there's no tumah because you took away half. In that case, we'll say when you took half from a full kizayit, hayav. And what's the case of the Mishnah? And I'll say the case of the Mishnah that says half is patur is you took a half a gezayit from one and a half gezetim. Which means, even though you took a half, bottom line, there's still a kezayit left, you're going to be patur. We're not going to say, well, if somebody else now takes the other half, so your actions brought it closer to the threshold. No. Which means, we see from over here, a kezayit and a half is analogous to the case of three hairs. Which means, you took three hairs, you had three hairs, you took one off, that's just as patur. Why? Bottom line right now, it's still tumah there. Therefore, if you have a kezayit and a half of a mit, is there tumah in the house? Yes. You took half a gezayit out. Is there still tumah in the house? Yes. So that's not considered a significant shiur. So he proves his deen of the hair of the mitzorah from the case of our Mishnah. Of Rav Nachman. Oh, so how is Rav Nachman that says if you took one hair from three, he says hayav. How is he going to explain these cases of the mit? Edi v'edi hayav. Really, I'll tell you both cases of hayav, which means you hayav. Even if you took, let's say, a half a kezayit from a kezayit and a half of a mit. Same logic. Why? Because bottom line, you brought it to the threshold of that if it's missing just a little more now, your actions are going to benefit you. Just like the case of the hair. However, v'adit not patur, but our mishnah that says half a kezayit is patur, the apik hatzi zayit mimet gadol. Which means, let's say you had a big mit, right? And you took half a kezayit. So since you didn't bring it to the threshold where it's immediate, if a little more goes out, you're going to benefit. So even Rav Nachman agrees that that case is going to be patur. Meaning, when did Rav Nachman say you're going to be hayab? Only when it's right at the border. You have to have three hairs, you took one, that is two hairs left, you're at the border. One more falls off, your actions benefited you. Which means comes out according to Rav Nachman, if let's say you had four hairs, and you took one, then I would also say patur. Why? Because even if one more falls off, you're still mahayav, it's still tameh. And therefore, he'll learn what? The case of our mishnahs, we're talking about what? A large mit. And therefore, taking a half a kezayit, you didn't do anything. The tumah is still there. And it's not considered that you benefited anybody yet, because even if more falls off, it's still going to be tameh. Alright, that is the case of the Mishnah. That's the machloket of Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshat. Comes the Gemara further. Incidentally, when it says mit gadol, Tosfot says it doesn't have to be a big mit. It just has to be two kezayit or more. Right? Yeah, two kezayit or more. But once you take half of the kezayit, you still have one and a half. So therefore, you're not at the threshold. So Tosfot speaks it out clearly. Mit gadol doesn't have to be more than two kezayit of mit. Comes the new Mishnah. Hanotel tzipornav zu bazu. A person cuts his nails on Shabbat using his nails. Zubazu, meaning he uses one nail to cut the other nail. Or bishinav, or he uses his teeth. Vechen se'aro, or if a person pulls out his hair on Shabbat. Vechen se'tamo, or his mustache hair. Vechen zekano, or his beard. And all these cases over here are going to be, we'll see the deed in a second. Vechen agodelet, that's a girl that or lady braids a hair on Shabbat. Vechen akohelet, that's one that puts on kohelet is makeup, mascara, rouge. Vechen apokeset, and for that matter, pokeset, as she says, is either combing one's hair or it's placing a certain type of dough on the face in order to give her a reddish complexion. And we will see all these cases in the Gemara. And be the answer to all these cases, mechayev, hayav, mechamim, osri, mishum shevut. But hakamim come along and say, it's only isur, the Rabbanan. Now we have to understand. Let's read Rashi over here. Rashi says, "V'chen se'aro tolesh se'ar rosho biyado." If a person pulls out his hair with his hands, "V'chen agodela," that's braiding se'ara, "V'chen akohelet aneha," okay, the lady puts on the mascara, right on the eyes. Because that we did. The bili aizel mechayev. Let's read Rashi. "V'chulam hatat." He said, "All these cases yachayab hatat." And the Gemara is going to explain why the bili aizel says Hayab in these cases. Now the only question we can ask is, what in the world is this doing here in our panic? Which means we just went from the carrying, and now we're going to cutting one's nails. So I saw an explanation brought down by the Rashash. He says, till now, what did we just talk about? We were talking about the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon holds Melachash Terasidika Legufa Patur. Cutting one nails is also considered a melacha shena sidicha legufa, because you don't need the nails. That's what Tosfot says, which is the cutting in the Mishkan was done what? They sheared the animal. They sheared the animal, and let's say they used the wool. However, here you're shearing, because that's what the yisur would be, and you're throwing it away. So therefore, this is another case of a melacha shena sidicha legufa. Therefore, the Gemara chose to broaden it. Choose to bring it over here. Okay, so comes the Gemara and says, so interesting, we have to remember that Shita of Tosafot. Tosafot holds that shearing, cutting one nails, is considered a melacha, she'ena sidicha legufa. And then even the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, machloket biyad. That the machlok between the rabbis and the Tanakama Rabbi Eliezer is only when you cut your nails with your fingers. Aval bekeli, but if you used a vessel, if you used a scissors, for example, hayav, then you're going to be hayav. Okay. Rashi says, machloket biyad, behashinotan biyado velo bekeli, who depat yabaran she'en dere geziza bekach behol. Because that's not the normal way to cut. And therefore the rabbis will tell you, if you did it biyad, it's considered a shinui, and therefore you're going to be patur, it's only asur. Whereas the bili aizel is mahmir even biyad. So the Gemara says pshita. The Gemara says, of course, it's obvious. Zu bezu tenan, which means it says in the Mishnah, no tail sipunav zu bezu. What does zu bezu mean? With your hands, right? Zu bezu means you cut your nails with themselves. So it's obvious. So what is the Gemara to say? Hold on, Mishnah is talking about when you cut them with your hands. It's obvious. It says bezu bezu. Because I would have thought, you know what? Maybe the rabbis say, not only you patur when you do it with your hands, but maybe you patur even if you did it with a vessel. But maybe the reason why the Mishnah chose the case of zubizu, you did it with your hands, to come and tell you how strict the Bili Ezer is. Which is, it chose the case of zubizu to say what? The Bili Ezer is so strict that says, even if you did it with your hands, you're going to be hayab. But I could argue with that, but really the rabbis will tell you patur even if you did it with a keli. That's what the Gemara says, no. If you did it with a keli, everybody says, even the rabbis will say you're going to be hayab on Shabbat. Kamash malan, ve'amar Rabbi Elazar, machloket la'atzmo, nu chidush. It's only a machlok between the rabbis and Rabbi Elazar if you're cutting your own nails. However, aval la'chadero, v'yakot patur. But if you're cutting somebody else's nails patur, that she explains because she can't do a good job. Because when you're doing your own nails, you can control, you can hold your hand, you can cut at them normal. But when you're cutting somebody else's hands, he moves, you cannot hold it correctly or cut it in a normal way. So everybody will say, patur. So the Gemara says, pshita, sipur naftenan. Of course, the Mishnah says, hanotel sipur nav. Cutting your own nails. What do you have to tell me? It's only talking about your own nails. The Mishnah says it's only talking about your own nails. Doesn't the Mishnah say sipur nav? Sipur nav means your own nails. So the Gemara says, mao detema. I would have thought that Bili Ezer lachaveron amim hayev. I would have thought that maybe the Bili Ezer would say you hayev even if you did it to your friend's nails. Maybe the reason why I just said your own nails, it was just coming to teach you maybe how lenient the rabbis are. That I would say the rabbis are lenient, what? Even on your own nails. That's why because of this kamashulah, no. That the machloket is only by your own nails, but by havero, even the Bili Ezer is mekel. Which again,
with or without a keli.
Yeah, we're talking about without a keli. Your friends even with the keli. Your friends even with the keli. With the keli. Look at Rashi. Rashi amal chavero, en yachol la'amen et yadol itol yafe. I'm sorry. I retract. Rashi says, en yachol la'amen et yadol itol yafe beli keli. If it's a keli, it's going to be asur. Because I guess you can do a good job. The keli is able to, but if you're pulling it off with your nails, or you're biting them off, so you can have to wait, good job. So therefore, according to that, let's review quickly this last point. The Gemara is saying, according to everybody, if you're doing la havero, patur. Biyad.
Without a
keli. However, if you do it for yourself, that's where you have the mahlok between the bihiz and hakamim. So the Gemara says, obvious. The Mishnah says, tziponav, his own. So he says, no, I would have thought that, maybe the reason why the Mishnah chose tziponav is why, because I would say like this, to come and tell you how lenient the rabbis are. I would tell you, if it chose tzipor, really I tell you to be the Eliezer was mekir, not only, I'm sorry, I would tell you not only to be the Eliezer was mahmir by tziponav, but maybe the Eliezer is mahmir even by somebody else. And the reason why it said tziponav is to show you how lenient the rabbis are. Kamashwa, no. It chose tziponav to say that's the only case where they're arguing on. But if it's somebody else's, even the Bili Ezer will say, patur. Comes again out further. Vechen se'aro. So too by one's hair. Tana. Someone pulls out hair on Shabbat. Hanotel melo pi hazug hayav. If a person pulls out a scissors amount of hair, which means the amount of hair that's in a snippet of a scissors, that's going to be the shiur of hair if you pull out on Shabbat. So they give us a vekama by the piyazug. How much is that? How much hair fits in the, is considered, let's say, in the blade of the scissors? Two hairs. So the Gemara says, "V'atanya." But what do you mean? At the end of that draita, after it said "Hanoten mele pizug," it says "V'lekorhashtayim." There's another law in the Torah that says we're not allowed to pull out hair. God forbid, when somebody dies, it used to be an old practice by the goyim that when people die, they would pull out their hair. So the Torah says, "Lo yikrihu korha." You're not allowed to pull out, make bald spots in your head, your own hair. That's not even on Shabbat. It's a regular law. So the Braita says, how much is the shoot of Korha that you're going to be Hayav? So it says, Shtayim. The shoot is two. Now, if that's on the same Braita, that means Melo Pri Azug is not Shtayim. Because the Braita said like this, what's the shoot of Melo Pri Azug that's going to be Hayav on Shabbat? So if you're going to tell me it's two, so then what does it say? Ul Korha Shtayim. It's mashma that Korha is two, and Melo Pri Azug is something else. Because again, all this is said in the same bright that says, Hanotel mele piliyazug hayav, ul korha shtayim. So therefore, if it says korha shtayim, must be melo piliyazug is a different shi'ud. So the Gemara says, no, ema vechen le korha shtayim. Change the bright that. And to say like this, and so too to korha is pulling out two hairs. Tanya Rabbi Yaakov Abayi to support this. Hanotel mele pliyazug b'Shabbat hayav. If a person takes out a blade's worth of hair, a scissors worth of hair on Shabbat hayav. Vekama mele pliyazug. How much is that? Shtayim. Two hairs. The Bili Yaizen Omer Achat. Forget the Bili Yaizen says one, but we see the first Tana the Mishnah clearly said that mele pliyazug is how many hairs? Two. Umodim hakamim the Bili Yaizen. Here we have a chidush. Hakamim agreed to the Bili Yaizen. There is one case where you'll be hayav even if you pull out one hair on Shabbat. If a person pulls out one white hair amongst black hairs, he's going to be hayav shafil ahat hayav. Why? Because that's significant to him. Because he doesn't want to look like an old man. And therefore he pulls out the one white hair on Shabbat, everybody will agree even one white hair is hayav. But now the Gemara says a big hadush. V'davar zeh af b'chol asur. And this item, by the way, pulling out white hairs from the black hairs is forbidden even during the week. Why? Because we know the Torah says that a man is not allowed to wear ladies' clothes. Now, besides the strict restriction of wearing ladies' clothes, that we learn from here that a man is not allowed to do things of vanity. Things that our ladies do. Ladies are concerned about their appearance and their look. And therefore, for a man to be vain, to pull out white hairs from black hairs, that's considered in the restriction of lo yilbash geves simlat isha. So that's a question. Oh, the post can talk about what about dyeing one's hair? The post can talk about it. We'll discuss that towards the end of the shiur. Tanya, we have a braita. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer. Last point. Rabbi Shimon Elazar taught siporin shepiresh ruba. Let's say you have a hangnail. the nail is it's hanging, which is the majority of the nail is detached from the nail. Vitzitzin. Tzitzin are cuticles, shepeshuruban, that the majority of the cuticle is detached. Biyad mutar. It's permissible to pull them off with your hand on Shabbat. Bechli hayab. But if you use a vessel, you're going to be hayab. Now that's a drastic, diversity. Meaning, with your hand, permissible. With a keli you jump to, hayab hatat. You see the right. So the Gemara says, hayab hatat. Mi'ika midi de bechli hayab hatat ubiyad mutar de chetayla. Do we find such diversity where if you do it with your hand, it's permissible? If you do it with the keli, it's chayav. Usually what we do is that we usually, if keli was chayav min haTorah, we would say hand should be asur mit Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, Haki kaman, Piresh ruban biyad mutar, bichli patur aval asur. So we downgraded. We said, with your hand will be permissible, with the keli will only be asur mit Rabbanan. Lo pirshu ruban. However, if let's say the majority of the nail or the cuticle did not come off, biyad patura valasur, bichli hayav hatat. Right, but then you're going to be hayav hatat. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar Bimuda, halakha kerabi Shimon ben Elazar. The halakha is going to follow Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. That what? So long as the cuticle or the nail is majority of the hang nail or the hang cuticle, permissible with your hand to pull it off. Amar Rabbi Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'hu shepiresh klape ma'ala u'mitzayid etoto. This last law is said regarding the cuticle alone. Meaning, the cuticle that we said is permissible, if the majority is off, is only in a specific case. Number one, it has to be causing him sa'a. It has to be causing him pain, which is discomfort. And shepirshu klape ma'ala. Which means it detached facing up. Kelape mala, it detached. The place of detachment is kelape mala. Now we have a mahlok at Rashiv et Tosfot. What does that mean, kelape mala? Some say kelape mala means that the detachment took place on the side of the nail. When it detached on the nail side, like most of our cuticles, let's say, it detaches from the skin on the nail side and is pulled back. Right? You pull it back towards the body. Tosfot understands it the opposite. Kelape mala means it's detached on the side of the body and it's pulled the other way towards the nail. So now we have a mahlok and a shiva Tosfot. What exactly, which type of cuticle is permissible to cut? And since we have a mahlok and a shiva Tosfot, and this over here is not resolved, Shulchan Aruch brings down both opinions and says, since we don't know who's right, cutting cuticles on Shabbat is asur. So therefore, the only thing that would be permissible would be the hangnail, which is either direction. So since the machlok, which direction is permissible or not? So therefore, the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch comes out that it is going to be asur to do it on Shabbat. Now the logic between the different sides is what causes the person more tsar. It seems that if it's going a different way, it's more discomfort or not. So the machlok is which way is considered more discomfort. In any way, we said cuticles would be asur, but the hangnail that pull was majority off would be permissible to pull it off on Shabbat. Amen.